Hey, welcome back. My name is Mike Hatch, and I am your host, and I'll be joined shortly by my co-host, Chris Bollinger. And today, we've got another best of episode, and we are diving deep into the archives of the episodes that we have recorded previously, all the way to episode number 15. And this episode we'll be sharing with you today from, what was it, December of 2021, is the fourth most downloaded episode in our library. And so, again, we're going through on our journey to 100 episodes, which will be happening soon. We are going through the top five most downloaded episodes just to kind of bring them up again for you to see, especially if you've been listening more recently and aren't aware of some of the amazing interviews we did early on. This episode, we did an interview with Kent Chevalier, who is the chaplain for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Kent is a good buddy of mine from a while back, and he, man, was this an amazing interview. So if you're struggling to find motivation to answer God's call on your life, you are in for some encouragement from today's interview with Kent Chevalier. In his usual passionate communication style, Kent shares the inspiring story of how God called he and his wife to be missionaries through Athletes in Action. He also reveals amazing biblical insight into where men find strength to, quote, do it afraid. That's what I think you're going to really find inspiring today. You'll be moved by Kent's vulnerability and reminded of God's faithfulness, most importantly. So just a little background on Kent. After serving for 22 years as a pastor in the local church, Pastor Kent stepped out in 2019 to become the chaplain for the Pittsburgh Steelers. He is a Pittsburgh native, a graduate of Geneva College and Trinity Evangelical Divinity School, which that's where I actually got to meet Kent. He and I went through our Master's of Theology degree together. Kent also partners with Lionshare as a national speaker and vice president of the board. He loves serving and encouraging individuals, businesses, and ministries with Erica, who's his wife, as a part of this new ministry of adventure, which he calls Team Chevalier. He values most being a husband to Erica and a dad to their three daughters. Now, before we jump in, just a reminder, my book, Manhood, Empowered by the Light of the Gospel, is available now on Amazon. You can order that. I also have a digital course that I am building currently that coincides with the book, and where I get a chance to walk you through chapter by chapter and help you process the content, go through the questions at the end of every chapter. Also, if you haven't yet, join the Empowered Manhood Facebook page. We're going to start having more conversations there about how we're all processing together our journey toward empowered manhood. So we'd love for you to come and check us out there. I'll have links to all of these things in the show notes. All right, guys, so here is our episode for this week, a best of episode from back in December 2021, episode number 15 with our interview with Kent Chevalier. So today we get to welcome a good buddy of mine. We go back a few years, did some seminary classes together through Trinity, and he also organized. He's a connector, here's what I like to say. I think he's like a relational entrepreneur. Mm. That's how that thought came to me today, and so what he connects people, he loves people, he disciples people. Very passionate about relational discipleship. His heart is so well aligned with us as an organization in CLC. But I just want to welcome my good buddy, Pittsburgh Steelers chaplain, Kent Chevalier. Welcome, Kent.
Mike, thanks for having me on. Chris, great to meet you, man. This will be a good conversation today, guys.
Definitely. Definitely, man. I'm looking forward to it. So, all right. So, Kent, you and I, our relationship started back, you know, with seminary together, and then of course, with the pastors networking meetings that you were running with other pastors, which was, man, you were more encouraging maybe than you even realize in our lives and our relationships, because you were a pastor before.
Yeah, man, dude, that's always been a passion of mine, man. I love connecting, because I think pastors in isolation, it's very dangerous, you know. That's what the enemy of our soul wants, man. He wants to, and I don't think this goes just for pastors, it's all men, right? He wants to isolate us into just doing our job and thinking that, you know, another guy is doing the same job is kind of my competition, and I want to outwork him. I want to outpace him. So my thought was to get all the pastors together because we're doing the same thing. Let's put, you know, points on the kingdom scoreboard rather than being all isolated. So it was just a great passion. And another thing, Mike, that we share in common is that, you know, we have the same barber. So
that's it, baby. That's it. The same barber. Right. Yeah. We're both bald, have a beard. Definitely.
That's right.
What did you think? Cause I saw your reaction. I hope it was a good one about my describing you as a relational entrepreneur. What do you think about that?
Yeah. I've never, I love that description. I was like, huh, that's pretty good. But Erica and I honestly feel like, especially in our role now as chaplains. So, you know, a lot of people don't know this, but Erica and I team together in this. We call ourselves Team Chevalier, and we see that we team in everything in life and marriage and raising kids and now doing this ministry chaplain. She's the chaplain to all the ladies. I'm the chaplain to all the guys. And we feel like another, you know, portion of our role is to be connectors within the city of Pittsburgh, within the NFL, other chaplains. You know, if you send a guy from the Steelers out to LA, maybe the Chargers, right? You connect them to, you know, that chaplain and his wife out there. So it's funny you say that, because I think that's been something that God has been maybe working to solidify in our relationship. So thank you for that, man. It means a lot.
Hey, Camp, before you tell your story, we want you to tell your story, but can you just describe, I think a lot of people know that there are chaplains in the NFL, but have no idea what you actually do. So can you describe what your role is and what your wife's role is with the Steelers?
Yeah, absolutely. And each team is very unique of how they approach this role. Coach Tomlin is very, how do I want to say this? Extremely open to having Erica and me around the coaches, around the coaches' wives, players' wives and girlfriends. And so Erica and I, very quickly, I'll just share this. We host Bible studies that anybody can come and be a part of. So we do a separate coaches study. I do a separate players study. I do a separate front office study. Anybody who's on front office or staff, right? And Erica, she like mirrors that with all the ladies of the organization as well. And then every night before a game, I'm bringing a church service to them, because think about it, none of these people can get to our traditional church services because most are, you know, we're playing on Sundays or whatever. So I always bring a church service to the guys in the team hotel, whoever wants to come and be a part of that. I'm preaching the gospel in those settings. And then probably one of the most like fun things for us is that Erica and I, you know, mid 40s, we get to invest in these young couples. So Coach Tomlin really wanted us to kind of be, I don't know, like spiritual parents to these, you know, young men and women. Think about it. They're 21, 22 years old, trying to figure out life, not just like we look at these guys and we're like, oh, they got it all together. But no, dude, they're trying to figure out how to have a relationship. They're trying to figure out being in a new city. They're trying to figure out things like buying a house and mortgages. And so it's almost like mentoring / spiritual parenting of these young couples who want to be a part of that. So that's a bit of a snapshot of what it is that we do. And then, dude, I'm at the facility every day with these guys, traveling with the team. And I have these moments where, like, because I'm just on the sidelines, people will walk up to me and ask me questions. It's beautiful, man. I love it.
That's so cool, man. That is so cool. And well, I know you said this about the Bible studies, the chapel, the service you actually do, the church that you bring on Sunday mornings, that includes coaches, right? And other organization members who could possibly participate, not just the players. Is that right?
Yeah. So like anybody who would want to come, staff, front office, coaches, players, trainers, anybody who would want to come and be a part of that chapel service can the night before the games.
That's awesome, man. Yeah. I love it. So, okay. You have an incredible message, Ken. And I've heard it a couple of times now from you, and I'm excited for our listeners to hear it. I know it's going to be an encouragement to these guys. And I'm excited for them to hear your heart, your passion, because it's there. You've got an incredible passion for discipleship for men. And so let's go back to, you know, 2019, because it was really the crux of it, if you will, or the tension, the struggle, the what Psalms often calls the waiting, which is like it's an inward writhing and struggling. You know, that it feels like 2019 was that for you initially. Explain a little bit about how you got connected to the Steelers, because I believe they had gone through a couple chaplains, and it sounded like, I think you said Tomlin was looking for something a little bit more sustainable.
Yeah. So, dude, I mean, I'll go back to this, and maybe guys who are listening can resonate with this. Sometimes, you know, as you're a part of your career, you know, I would call, you know, what it is that I was doing a calling. I knew that God had called me to the church to pastor this church that I had been. And so I've been there. It's still my home church. I love my church. But I was pastor there, and about year 10 of being pastor, I began to have what I've been just, I just knew something in my knower. Like, you know, sometimes we can churchify these words, right? But like, I just knew something in my spirit. And I get really confused by that kind of terminology. So I just knew something in my knower. Like, I could just tell that something was changing in me. Like, I still had the same responsibilities at the church. I was still leading and shepherding and teaching, all of that. But something shifted inside of me. And as I have these conversations with guys, like, you can't describe it, but you just know it.
Yeah.
And so I've had so many conversations with men that are like, yep, that's when I knew I needed to change careers. Yep, that's when I knew that I needed. But there's this waiting process, because you don't want to screw yourself and like jump too early, but you also know that you need to do something because you're frustrated in your knower. And you know, the Bill Hybels, to use a term, this holy discontent was inside of me. And nothing was wrong. You know, I loved my church, but it took about 2 years in that waiting process of like, I know something is changing, to the point where things began to change. So anybody who's listening, man, if you're in that, like, that is probably the most painful, frustrating spot to be in. And so here's a little bit of my story, because in that frustration and in the waiting 2 years is when Vance McDonald, former tight end of the Pittsburgh Steelers, walked into one of the church services. He had just got traded from the San Francisco 49ers, was looking for a local church in the Pittsburgh area. He happened to come into the service that I was leading that day. He introduced himself after the service, and he said, "Can we grab a cup of coffee?" And I'm like, "Dude, I'm a Steelers fan. Sweet. I know who you are. Let's go." You know? And so we hung out, and that's where he told me at that point about his family, about his wife, and about their move, and how he was hoping that within the Steelers organization that there would be a chaplain. But there wasn't one. And I'm like, wait a second. You know, the Steelers have always kind of had a huge legacy of chaplains. Mm-hmm. Well, come to find out, there was just a gap in time. You know, about 18 months where they didn't have a chaplain. So here Vance and a couple other guys were leading these Bible studies and chapel settings and all of that for the Steelers that particular season. And so when he said that, like, that the Steelers didn't have a chaplain, I was like, well, first of all, what does a chaplain do? You know, like, what exactly goes on? And when he told me, it's basically like discipling men, helping men, you know, walk alongside of them. I was like, I love that, you know, so fire up. And something jumped in my knower. Like, it was deep down inside me. I wasn't just excited about like, dude, that would be sweet. It was more like, huh, I wonder if that could be me. You know, but I didn't chase it. I was kind of afraid to do that. You know, like, I just met this guy. I don't, you know, right? So he and I established a relationship. And over that next year, so now, mind you, this would then be additional waiting for me in that frustration period.
Yeah.
And so he goes through a whole season, and now I'm seeing Vance and these guys very differently, because we've had some professional athletes attend our church and whatnot. And I began to have this shift in my thinking of, because most of the time we would say, hey, just leave them and their families alone so that they can just be here and worship. Like, don't ask for an autograph, this kind of thing. But all of a sudden I had this click in my, like, well, who are these guys' pastors then? Like, if we're leaving them alone because we want them to worship, that's great and that's fine, but who's their pastor? And so I'm going, you could see like the shift beginning to take place in my heart. And then all of a sudden in that off season, Vance asks, would you consider like formally discipling me and a group of guys? And I'm like, dude, fire up. I am so into that. So during that, he kept dropping this prayer request of, we really need to find a chaplain. We've been like, it's been 16, 18 months now that we don't have a chaplain. Every time he said it, it would jump in my knower. And so I eventually got up the courage to ask him like, dude, do you think that I could be that guy? And he was like, well, I'm sort of hoping that you would ask. And I'm like, okay,
I've been trying to hint. Come on, yeah. Ken.
No, but here's the thing that I've learned, like, and maybe this is going to speak to somebody, like I have learned in my journey that I need to stop initiating things on God's behalf. Dude, you search the scriptures and you never, ever see somebody initiating something and God's going, I'm going to bless that. You never see that.
But that's a great observation.
All of us do this, right? Mm-hmm. We take a step and we're like, God, can you bless me now? And he's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I never told you to take that step, bro. And so I'm not going to bless that misstep. Right. And wow. So I think, you know, something that I've learned from my mentor is this phrase of what God initiates, he permeates. What we initiate, we have to sustain in our own strength, in our own power, in our own provision. Right. But he's not going to bless something that he never initiated. Oftentimes, we're trying to keep alive the very things that God might be trying to kill. Right. So anyway, so Vance and I, he's like, I don't know how this would work, but let me introduce you to Coach Tomlin. So, dude, growing up in Pittsburgh my whole life, I'm like, either way, this is going to be awesome because I get to have lunch with Coach Tomlin. Are you kidding me? A kid who grew up in Beaver County. This is a huge Steelers fan my whole life. And it was at that lunch with me, Vance, and Coach Tomlin that, you know, he kind of explained what he wanted in the chaplain role, how he was looking for a specific Pittsburgh couple. Like, I guess the last couple of chaplains were from the West Coast and they didn't last very long in the cold winters of Pittsburgh. And and so Erica and I growing up here our whole life, man, as soon as he said that, I was like, again, my knower jumped. I was like, man, that would be incredible to do this with Erica. And so he invited me to come and speak at their, you know, mini camp chapel. And dude, I preached Jesus, but then here's my thing. Like I was starting to believe like this is it. Like, this is the direction that I know, like this is happening. Right. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. After I spoke at chapel and I was hanging out at mini camp and whatnot, I didn't hear back from Tomlin. It was like dead silence. So like I shot my shot, right?
Right.
And then nothing. So yep. I know that those are the scariest moments, especially for us dudes, when we take a risk, we start believing in the dream, and all of a sudden, like we get radio silence. And it's like jumping, I like to say it this way, you jump off that high dive, right? And you question your decision-making skills in that moment before your feet hit the water. And you're like, why did I do this? Am I an idiot? Why did I step out like this? You know, and it just doesn't make logical sense that I might switch from this career to this, but I just kind of stepped into it, but my foot hasn't landed yet. And when I wasn't hearing anything, man, this is where I sank really deep into the frustration. And I started to believe some lies. And I think especially as men, our identity can be so closely linked with how we perform and what we do and what people say to us that or say about us, that when even nothing was being said about me, I began to listen to the lies of the enemy of my soul. And it basically went something like this, like, you got to be kidding me that you think you'd be good enough to get this position. Like, who do you think you are that you might be able to be the pastor to the Steelers? You're just, you know, some small kid from Beaver County. Wow. You know, and the, yeah. And these the lies of the enemy. And I mean, I know I'm not the only one who has the enemy whispering his lies into their heart. And so maybe somebody who's who's on here today, man, that's been happening to you. And so we have a choice to make in that moment. Are we going to listen to the voice of the enemy who's whispering those kind of lies that condemn us, that shame us, that guilt us? Or are we going to listen to the voice of God and his truth about us, that we're his kids, man? We are a child of God. And no matter what happens, our identity is not wrapped in what we do. It's whose we are, his yeah. kids, that God loves us, that, you know, when he's on our side, nothing can be against us. So it was a massive fight. Wow. And I sank there because I wasn't hearing anything. So I travel out to
real quick. What did that look like for you? Do you feel like there was a depression there? Was it more introspective? You know what I mean? Like, I'm just yeah. curious.
Yeah, dude. I remember just not being able to sleep well. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember just not having motivation to do my job that I was still supposed to do, because there's this piece of my heart and my attention that had gone way over here. And now, like, it's almost felt like I had one foot out and one foot in. I wasn't performing at anything well, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of what it felt like to me.
That's helpful. If I were to ask my description.
Yeah. If I were to ask my wife, she would probably say it like I was constant hangry, you know, like just irritated. Like, she's like, just eat something, which, you know, leads to other things. But,
Oh yes.
Yeah. So that's kind of what it felt like to me.
So then sorry, I know I cut you off, but you were not, then you took a trip out, I think, to Colorado. Is that right?
Well, so this first one, so we've got really two stories that we kind of hang our hat on. I go out to California because I still had responsibilities at the church that I was leading, right? And so I go out for some training, and it was at that training that I went out to this prayer experience. They said, just, man, follow this prayer guide, and this is how you'll lead people when you get back to your church. So I go through the prayer guide, and it was, you know, Isaiah 43, man, where, Ezekiel 37, where, you know, I was journaling all of these, you know, moments. God, I need you to do something. And he, you know, in that passage, it's Ezekiel, I want you to say this and do this. And he says it and does it. And boom, like that, something supernatural took place. And at the very end of that passage, it says, this way you'll know it's me from God, right? Mm-hmm. And so at the end of that prayer experience, I'm writing, God, I lay this all down. If I'm initiating this, I don't want to be that guy if you don't want me to be the guy. So I lay it all down at your feet. And if you want to move, if you tell me to move, if you tell me to do something, then I will do it. That way I'll know it's you, right? And so I close my prayer journal. After writing that out, I still have it in my prayer journal. And at 10:24, this is how I know, right? At 10:24 California time, Coach Mike Tomlin texted me right there. Hey, can we grab lunch to talk about the position? And dude, in that moment, I knew this had been 3 years that I've been waiting. And I just knew in my knower, God's about to break through in something. Like, I was on holy ground, to use that terminology, right? Mm-hmm. Of like, he's speaking. Oh my goodness. I call Eric and I said, I think I'm about to become the chaplain to the Pittsburgh Steelers. And he hadn't even offered me the position yet, right? But I just knew. It was like, I began to like know in my knower, and went out to lunch with him. He offered me the position, but then this is where like the story takes a massive turn. Because all this time I had thought that this position would be hired by the Pittsburgh Steelers, right? I mean, that's what everybody thinks when I share this, right? So when he offers me the position, he says to me, now to do this, I want you and Erica to consider coming on staff with Athletes in Action, to which I knew exactly what that meant. Because I've known people who have served in Athletes in Action, which is a ministry of the missions organization CREW, formerly known as Campus Crusade for Christ. And I knew that every person on that staff has to raise 100% of their income, you know, 100% of their benefits, you know, all of their ministry budget, it all has to be raised. So like, as soon as he said that, I was like, you know how like you're having a conversation with somebody, but in the back of your head, you're thinking stuff. So God and I were having a conversation in the back of my head going, God, you're kidding me. Like, I've got three teenage daughters, man, like colleges, weddings, you know, I'm staring all of that right in the face. And you want me to become a missionary? You kidding me, right? And it was in that moment, you guys, and maybe this will speak to somebody who's listening, that God began to reveal to me where I was actually placing my trust. And it was in a paycheck. Like, it was in a consistent paycheck. It was in my position that was secure. It was actually in me. Like, I provide for my family. I provide all this stuff. And I'm, so God began to take me to school. You can see like the process of him just kind of tearing down. Kent, are you actually going to practice what it is that you've been preaching for these 20 plus years as a pastor? And I'm just going like, dang, but all the time, like Coach Tomlin's still talking and I'm having this conversation with God, right? And so I didn't shut the process down, but in my mind, I did. I went home to Erica, told her all this, and we were like, we cannot step out as missionaries and raise all of our support. This is crazy. Why would we step away from a great church and a great position in all of this? But we didn't shut it down, so we agreed that we would fast and pray. These disciplines that we've learned from mentors and things, to fast and pray to see if this would be really God.
I just want to jump in for just a second here.
Yeah.
Commend you on that, but also just reiterate what you said. I think that's important for us as men who largely in our culture have become more addicted to being comfortable and safe.
Yeah.
To you know, some men would, or you know, I've got to be healthy. I've got to keep my body strong. Why would I fast? Why would I do something like that? That I feel like would not benefit me in terms of my physical goals or whatever. There are all sorts of different reasons, but that is a very legitimate way to seek God's will in your life.
Yeah.
And I mean, when Jesus says, I think he says, when you fast. And he gives kind of parameters. So the idea is we as believers are expected to fast, actually.
Sure.
And I just think, I don't think many men take God seriously at that challenge to actually lay it at the altar in that way. So I just wanted to emphasize that point.
It's great. And it's not just on big decisions, man. This is a practice. You know, when Jesus does say, when you fast, it was something that was a rhythm for his disciples, you know, for his followers. And so it's, if you want to experience God more deeply, go without something that you love, you enjoy. I love a great steak, you know, so I'm going to go without that so that I can come closer and experience God more deeply. It seems weird, I know, but honestly, when we fast and pray, we are met by God in a very unique way.
Hey guys, did you know that the least represented demographic among men in the church today are millennials, ages 24 to about 40? Most people would not be surprised that millennial men aren't attending church, but did you know that a Barna research study recently revealed that among men who attend church on a regular basis, the most engaged were millennial men? In fact, 72% of millennial men attending church are engaged in some sort of study or small group of some kind, while ages 35 to 54, there's only 54% involved, and it goes down to 40% when you look at ages 55 and older. Hi, my name is Mike Hatch, and if you have millennial men attending your church, CLC has a fantastic resource for you to be able to disciple them and engage them. And it's called Elbow to Elbow, and it's for young adult men in their 20s and 30s. Elbow to Elbow equips young adult men to lead from a Christ-centered foundation in their homes, at church, in their communities, and in the marketplace. You can find out more about the Elbow to Elbow study if you go to clchq.org or shoot me an email at mhatch@clchq.org. And I'd love to tell you more about this really fantastic study and how you can integrate it into your discipleship strategy in your church. That's all for now. So let's get back to the interview.
Yeah, man. So we did that. We committed to fast and pray. And I kid you not, man, this is where the story gets a little bit wild. So Erica, her place in the summers is to go out on our back patio and pray and have her morning devotion time. And I'm more of a get in my one chair all the time, you know. And so she goes out there and she goes, Kent, come out here. And the fern on our back patio was moving. Like, so I'm going, what in the world? I'm like, is there a snake in there? Like, what's up? So as we got close to the fern, a bird flies out of the fern. We open up, peel back the fern. And here there was a bird's nest in there with baby eggs, like eggs were in there. And so, you know, when we did that, the mom, she had perched up and she's like yelling at us, like, don't mess with my babies, you know? And so Eric, obviously we didn't mess with them, but they hatched like a week later. And so as we are in the middle of fasting and praying about this decision, and we're reading the scriptures and all of this, dude, it hit us like a lightning bolt of, oh my goodness, like God is speaking directly, like not an audible voice, but with this, like right next to where Erica is praying and fasting and reading her Bible, there are baby birds that are like, you know, feed me, you know, and the mama bird comes right to them and feeds them. All they had to do was call out. They couldn't do anything else. And she comes and feeds them. So obviously we're going, oh my goodness, the words of Jesus say in a parable in the Sermon on the Mount, like, look at the birds of the air. They don't labor, they don't toil, but yet your heavenly Father feeds them. And how much more important are you than these birds? And so, dude, we were like, oh my goodness, I think that God is telling us to do this and he'll take care of us. This is crazy. Like, I'm like freaking out that this is starting to look like this is the direction that we're heading. So Erica and I, we invite God, is this what you're saying? We felt like he was leading us to make this massive jump because of it wasn't just the birds and all this, it was confirmation from, you know, mentors in our lives. Whenever we make a big decision, we're getting spiritual mentors to speak into our lives that we trust. The words of scripture were lining up like with God's provision, this image of the birds, crazy. So dude, we took that all as green lights that we're going to jump out and we're going to do this afraid, right? I was freaking out like, oh my goodness, nothing changed. I still have three daughters. They're in college. They're, you know, all this stuff, but we're going to do this afraid. Yeah. And I love to say this, when we stepped out, our fear was fighting with our faith. And it was like this collision course. And I think sometimes as dudes, we feel like we can't show fear. We can't, like, you know, like, I can't say that I'm afraid. I can't, you know, admit any weakness or like question or doubt. And dude, if you search the scriptures, if you look at people that we might consider giants of the faith, dude, they stepped out even though they were afraid. And they'll literally say, dude, I'm freaking out. You know, if God doesn't come through, we're screwed, you know? And so that was us. So we decided to go out to Colorado State University to sign on the dotted line with Athletes in Action. It happened to coincide with Crew's international gathering. So get this picture, 10,000 missionaries in this giant coliseum, right? And we're there for training. And so it was incredible. 10,000 people singing and worshiping and training all together. It was awesome. Our first ever experience. And so we did it, man. I signed my life away, bro. And I became a full-time missionary of Athletes in Action. And it was there like that Erica and I began to like you make that decision and then you're like, I can't believe we just did this.
Yeah, right. What did we just do?
And it led to her and me, like it revealed some more stuff in us. Like, and we were anxious. We started to like bite at each other. We were irritated. And I was like, you can see what's going on here. Like the spiritual warfare that we began to experience as soon as we stepped into this, it was like the enemy wanted to divide Erica and me right away. And I was like, dang it. And so we had a really bad, like, I don't want to say we fought, but we had robust dialogue, you know, about like just stuff that had nothing to do. And it was just like, you could see it. And so we went to bed pretty frustrated, but like on the same page, it wasn't about us. It was about like the stuff we were experiencing and the fear that we still had. And so Erica's thing in the mornings, man, to clear her head, she went for a run. And if she were here to tell the story, alongside of the road in the middle of Colorado State University, she basically had it out with the Lord in the sense of like, I need to know 100% that you're in this. You know, even though we had this experience, right? I just need to know. And I don't think God's afraid of those kind of conversations. He gets it. His kids needs reassurance. And so she broke down. And if you know my wife, man, she's this little spiritual ninja. And so she doesn't show emotion all that much, but she broke down along the side of the road in Colorado State, cried her eyes out saying, God, I need you. And so like to hear that kills me as a husband of like, I'm causing this. Yeah. So by the way, they call me the crying pastor because I'm just anyway.
It's all good, so, bro. This is the authenticity that we're looking for. Man. Yeah. And this is why you were on my heart to have on this show, bro, because I think you exude it in tremendous ways. I love your heart. So no worries. Yeah. This is a safe place.
Because sometimes as men, we can make decisions and not be in unity with our spouses.
Oh yeah.
And that's a huge no-no, right? Mm-hmm. We cannot take a step without unity with our wives. Amen. And so when I began to realize, oh my goodness, is this me without her? Like it messed with me big time. But she didn't tell me any of this. She had her thing and she said, God, I need to know 100%. Mm-hmm. And so she comes back to the room. We get ready. We go to the final session with all of these 10,000 crew missionaries. We're singing in this moment. And just picture this Coliseum, round stage in the middle of this. We're on one side of the stage. And on the way other side of the round stage, there is a painter who is painting. And the canvas, the back of it is to us. We can't see what he's painting. And the camera is specifically hiding what it is that he's painting. And so as we're singing, he's like frivolously, you know, doing his thing over there. And as the music begins to kind of come down and close and all of this, the camera pans back. And guys, what do you think that dude painted?
I'm going to let Chris guess. Any guess, Chris?
No,
it's crazy. This dude painted a bird's nest with three baby birds with their mouths open and grapes from the vine were dropping into the baby birds' mouths. And so I look at Erica, she looks at me, we both begin to weep in that moment. And right. We're like, game on. Now she didn't tell me that she had earlier that morning, God, I need something. So God had specifically very much 10,000 people. He used this to answer Erica's very specific prayer to him. And here's the thing, the guy, this is crazy. And I'll just end the story here, right? The guy who they brought in to paint has a really famous ministry that he paints portraits of people. So everybody in the room who knew this guy, like, why did you not paint a portrait of like Jesus, sir? You know, right? And yeah. And they interview him, and he says, they ask him the question in front of 10,000 people, and they said, why didn't you paint a portrait? That's what you're known for. And here's his words. I don't know, man. I woke up early this morning, and I felt like God really told me I needed to paint birds. And so Erica looks at me, I'm looking at her going like, oh my goodness. And so I tried to buy the painting, but this dude is so famous and he's so good that I couldn't afford the painting. So I took a picture of it. I still have it to this day, man. Those are the, we call those stories, the one where I wrote in my prayer journal and Mike Tomlin texted me right away. When I laid it all down, he then texted me. And then when this story of the baby birds, we call these the handlebars that we are holding on to for the ride of our lives, man. And guys, wow. I can just say this, like when we jumped, like our ministry has taken off so much. Mike, you said earlier that like during the COVID stuff and everything, it was so hard to do ministry via Zoom. Everybody was on lockdown. And in this third season now with the Steelers, our ministry has grown so much. It is outpacing us. So Erica had to quit her job, and she has now joined full time with Athletes in Action. So we are still doing it afraid.
Yeah,
I'm in a position where I am trusting God for absolutely everything. And God is stretching our faith in ways that I didn't even know we needed to be stretched. He brought alive parts of my faith that were dead, that I did not know were dead. And so we're still doing this afraid. But I can tell you this, God has proved himself faithful month after month after month, man. And I'm excited to be on this journey, and I cannot wait to continue to watch him, even when fear is fighting our faith still. So, man, that's our story. I'm sticking to it.
That's amazing. That's right, baby. That's right, Kent. That is absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
Well, I was just reminded of Gideon when you were going through your story about how, you know, Gideon does something for God. I can't remember exactly what it was initially. And then, you know, God wants him to go further. And so he does the thing where he lays the wool down and says, okay, make the wool wet and everything else dry. And then God does that. And he says, okay, we'll do the opposite.
Yeah,
you know, right. God does that. And then, I mean, but God keeps stretching him, you know, then he, you know, he's got to face an army, a huge army. And, you know, he starts off with 32,000 men, and that's too many for God. So God kicks a bunch of them out, and then they end up going down to a river, and he keeps the 300 that drink like dogs, that's right. You know, just crazy, you know, crazy. And then, you know, you feel for Gideon because it's like, what's the guy thinking at this point? He's got 300 men.
Right.
You know, but then God shows him, you know, just leave it to me. I'm going to take care of it. But, you know, I just thought of that when you were going through, because every step of the way, you know, you went to God and you said, okay, God, I need something. I need a sign. And you got it.
Yeah.
Immediately.
Yeah.
And real quick, just to piggyback that, Chris, too, I love that you brought that up, because literally this week I've been in Gideon doing some serious meditation on it, going through it over and over again, doing a lot of listening, you know, to the audio Bible, and something stood out to me, and it surprised me, Kent, that this came to me, because I knew we were going to be interviewing you. Yeah. And this just attached so well, I think, to what your story was. So Chris, I love that you said that. One of the things that stuck out to me was that, you know, so when Gideon is called, and by the way, just for those of you who don't know theologically, this is Jesus, by the way, who shows up to Gideon. When you see the angel of the Lord, and he's saying, I am sending you and I will be with you, this is Jesus himself showing up. He does all through the Old Testament. People often don't realize Jesus was around before.
Right.
Anyway, but he says that he tells Gideon to go. And then he says this, he tells them, and of course, Gideon questions him. Really? I don't know about this. I'm not sure. I don't think I'm good enough, or we're not big enough, blah, blah, blah. But then he said to him, He tells him, no, I want you to go. I told you to go. And then he says this, go in the strength you have. Go in the strength you have and save Israel out of Midian's hand. Am I not sending you? And then that goes to what you were just saying, Chris. Okay, so Gideon went, you know, in the strength that he had in that moment. I think of the bread and the loaves of fish where, again, we're, you know, offer to God what you have. He will take it and multiply it and use it. But often I think, like what Chris said, we go with more strength thinking we have more than we usually have. And often God will dwindle that down or humble us in ways to make us get to a place where, no, you're really not that strong. Right. And I wonder actually, Kent, I wonder if that was, I don't know, maybe that's where COVID came in your journey as part of it. I'm curious your thought on that.
Yeah. I mean, there are so many things that have happened that have outpaced our strength, our knowledge, our experience. And it has time and time again taken us back to that story. Like that. So like the Gideon experience of like, you know, hey, I can't do this. And he trusts, he does it, and God shows up in a big way. It's that Ezekiel story. It's that, hey, this vision of I'm going to step out and do this, and boom, supernatural things start to happen when he does, you know. And we've watched that same thing happen in our life. And when COVID shut down the world, we did our best in the strength that we had with the technology that we had to do ministry. It was so hard just on everybody, right? But I think what that showed was like, relation, like the hungry of heart who really wanted to be a part of things and all that, we began to develop deeper relationships via Zoom and conversations via text and things like that, that probably wouldn't have happened if the pace kept the way that it was. And then for us, a particular part of my story is that my brother died from COVID, you know, at 49. And it slowed, I think it slowed me down in a way of, okay, Kent, there are natural talents and abilities, and you're a, you keep a pace, but I like you realize it's not about what you do for me. It's about who you are with me. Like, let's just be together. So when COVID shut the world down, I was still in person with the Steelers. My brother died coming up, you know, on, so November 29th, that following week, the Steelers and the NFL, they were tightening the protocols as it came to playoffs. And I got bounced from the facility being with these guys in person. And so it took away everything it on so many levels. And it came to this point of, okay, again, Kent, what do you trust in these really, really difficult moments of trials? Like, is it the fact that you've been a pastor all these years and you know the right thing to say at the right moments and, you know, you've performed funerals and all this stuff? You can be strong in those moments because you've trained your emotions to down, right? But in this, I couldn't. And so God was, I think he's continuing to bring up stuff where I need to continue to submit to him, for when I'm weak, then he's strong in me. And so that's a huge lesson that I've been learning as a result of COVID and these Gideon moments of stepping out and God, this, I don't know if I can do this, but okay. God's coming through every single time, despite of who I am. Mike, you know me.
Oh yeah. Yes. Yeah. So one of the things I was thinking of as you're just sharing that is that in that moment, you know, when you see the painting and you're in that arena and you, and for you and Erica, you get this confirmation and you start weeping and you're like, this is it. Yeah. You can't foresee what, you know, you can't foresee that COVID's going to, you can't foresee that your brother is going to be a victim of COVID. You can't foresee some of these things. Right. And it's so, it, you know, I think sometimes we forget and I think there's, it's good and right, I think, in the moment to be excited and inspired and moved by what God, you know, what God probably has in store that he's made clear to you. But I think your story is sobering in knowing that even in that moment, as other guys are walking through their story, and they maybe have a moment like that, for example, maybe they're thinking of a moment where, yeah, God clearly showed up and showed me this. Mm-hmm. You also have to remember that doesn't mean that it's level ground from then on, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Jesus himself said, hey, you're going to have trouble in this world, but take heart because I've overcome the world. Right. I mean, dude, from a very practical, like when you think about it, because this kind of keeps me up at night. It's not that I'm not, God's going to provide everything. He's got, like, I have really bad days, you know, of trust, and I'm human. So like when COVID shut the world down, and as a pastor, I began to know, like, the first thing that goes in these, you know, from generous people in the church, the first thing that goes when crunch time comes is their extra giving, you know, maybe even their tithing to the church. So I'm going freaking out still, like, God, great. You called us to do this. Now you're, you know, people's bank accounts are being frozen and they're like, whoa, we're not giving. We're not, you know, charity giving was down across the board, not just church stuff, like just any giving was down. And so I began to have that, like, fear fighting my faith. God, I know you told us to do this. And in faith, I'm saying, this is your problem. Like, you told me to do this, bro. This is on you, you know, and not being callous about it, but like, God, like, I literally can't do anything about that. I can't even meet with people to talk about it. Right, I can't, right. You know, of support raising, all this stuff. And dude, I'm just telling you, God, he took care. Like, he showed up and he showed off, amen. You know, in those ways. It was super stressful, super hard, super, like, for everybody, not just us in Team Chevalier, as we call ourselves, right? But God continued and continues to be faithful amidst the adversity that we're still experiencing.
And you've been at this now for, this is your third year as chaplain?
Yeah, right? third season. Yep.
Okay, so you were a Pittsburgh boy, grew up in the area, pastor in a Pittsburgh church. So a lot of things have changed, obviously. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, the people that you were ministering to and with as a church pastor, I'm assuming are very, very different than the people that you're working with now, right? I mean, you've got a pretty diverse crew, right? I mean, you've got the front office people who are probably Pittsburgh people. They've been there for a while. They're a little older, many of them. And then you've got these young athletes and their girlfriends and wives who just got traded to the Steelers or just got traded from the Steelers, or their career's over, you know, they get an injury and their career's over in 2 years. So you've got, you know, very different challenges now. Talk a little bit about what this has taught you in the past couple of years. What have you learned now in your very, very different job with very different people? What is God teaching you as part of this experience?
Yeah, I think there are common threads. And the way that I like to say it is, in the NFL, people are people. And in the church, people are people, right? The ministry for me has not changed. The mission has not changed. To reproduce disciple makers within now the NFL. And I used to do that within the church context as a pastor. You know, when you think about, there's not much of a difference of these young adults who are in the NFL than the young adults who are trying to figure out church, God, Christianity, or being really... they have a really bad taste in their mouth about Jesus, God, Christianity, because some of the things that they might see on Twitter and all of this. A young adult in the NFL is getting their theology based off of a tweet, just like a young adult in the church is getting their theology based off of a tweet. Super dangerous, but it's the same. You know, you think about, you know, young adults and you know, men and women in the church, they're dealing with real life relationship stuff. Same is true in the NFL. Now, are there differences? Absolutely. One of the most unique, high profile, you know, they can't go anywhere without being recognized. So this celebrity status for some of these guys, is very difficult to navigate relationships and trust. But at the baseline, like, trust is an issue for all of us, right? Who do I trust in this life? And who can I actually do life with that isn't working in an angle somehow, some way? Mm-hmm. And so there's some uniqueness for sure. And I would say one of the major things, and I think I spoke to this earlier, is that no matter who we are as a guy, I think that the NFL on Sundays is it speaks to our culture the rest of the days of the week, where performance is king.
Yep.
Right. And yep. My identity is tied to how I perform.
Right.
You know, job, you know, performance appraisals, all this. Dude, it just so happens that they do that in extreme, like millions of viewers. And the name on the back in front of their jersey, you know. So I don't know if that fully answers the question, but man, those are some of the similarities and differences that I see in the NFL compared to what I used to do in the church. Mission is the same, just the vocation, the place where I'm pulling it off, the platform has changed.
Now, has anything changed in you? I mean, has it sharpened your focus? Has it changed your perspective in any way in terms of your mission and how you perform it?
Yeah. So I'll put it this way. So within, you know, at the pastor of the church, everybody knows who I am. They want to be there, right? They come out of a willingness. They want to be at the services, a part of small groups. These are the people that want to. When I go to the Steelers, I have that complete mixed bag. People know what I represent. They know who I'm there, you know, for. I've never experienced fully on a day-to-day basis people ducking me on purpose. Mm-hmm. So I have to work on, I know who I am. And just because that guy doesn't want to talk to me because of who I represent doesn't mean it doesn't take a shot at my identity. Another thing that I think God is teaching me big time is, especially with everything that happened with my brother and COVID, and he's teaching me his sovereignty in ways that I didn't know I needed to be taught. So he continues to take me to school of he's in charge, I'm not. He's God, I'm not. And I know no dude struggles with that. Like, I'm the leader of my life, you know? And it's hard to submit to God's ways because, man, 44 years. And you'd think I know this lesson by now. God's ways are way better than my ways. Why do I keep trying to do it my way? Because my way always either like gets me in trouble or I hit a roadblock or whatever. And then I think the third thing, just throughout our entire journey of becoming missionaries, is that do I trust God at his promises, at his very word? Do I really trust that? Or have I been playing a role? It's not that I didn't trust them, but like if you really got down to it, man, like, do I trust God with everything in my life? My girls, do I trust that he's got them, right? This ministry, dude, let's just be honest. Coach Tomlin, if he goes, most likely I go. You know, like if he makes a decision and he says, okay, I'm good, I had a great run, you know, and he just decides to retire. Dude, I could be gone. And then all of a sudden I'm like, God, what the...
Yeah.
So it's real. We're out here on a limb, man. And we are trying, but that doesn't mean I don't have doubts. Like, I'm out here on this limb, but I have doubts.
Yeah.
And I wrestle big time about, you know, some of those inner, I don't want to call them inner demons, but there are parts of me that I have that are just dark, that are, you know, that I have not submitted to God. Mm-hmm. And I think every dude, if we are honest, there are secrets, there are temptations, there are places in our lives where we are still the Lord of our lives. And I struggle with this phrase that either Jesus is Lord of all, or he's not Lord at all. Mm-hmm. And man, I want to be the guy, try to be the guy that it's the case of me. He's Lord of all, but I know those little parts of me that, are still the struggle.
Right.
Man. Thank you for that, Kent. Often, I mean, we talk about circumstances around us that we can't control. And as you enter into a calling, and you've entered into a new calling over the last 3 years, and how it hasn't been just easy and smooth going, and things happen, but those exterior consequences or circumstances are one thing, but there's also that interior piece that plays out. I think when we enter into God's calling and really begin to serve him, in some way, in especially new ways, God begins to plow up stuff inside of us. And yep. I think often reveal stuff in us that we maybe had been blind to before.
Yeah.
And I think how we interact with that and God in terms of that level, if we're going to be honest and vulnerable about it, then I think that's something that God can, obviously he works with us in terms of that. But I think it's when we deny it, shove it to the side, avoid it, trying to, hey, I'm called for this. I need to look the part now, you know?
Right.
But right. So I just really appreciate you sharing that there's still darkness in there that God is revealing to you that, and yeah, there will be in our lives until the day we die. I think there's always shadows inside of us that God is revealing to us.
Yeah. And what's crazy, this is where the enemy of our souls wants to keep us, right? He wants to keep us in believing those lies about ourselves. And if I confess this, man, I'll be done. I'll be, you know, fired. I'll be, you know, all these things. That's where he wants to keep us. But this is where I'm discovering, that I believe it's James, in the book of James, that confession brings healing. Mm. You know? And at those deepest, darkest places, I'm realizing that is true. Mm. Healing, sometimes when you confess, it does, it's not just like that, but it's a process of being able to be vulnerable and open with, you know what? Yes, this happened to me. Mm. It did. You know, and it's not my fault. It's, you know, but it's a part of who I, like it, it's part of my story. And I don't want to live in that shame and that guilt anymore. So that confession is bringing healing, as I'm discovering that, you know,
Man. So that's beautiful. That's 1 John 1, where, I mean, I think there's a James passage, you're right to that, but 1 John 1 comes in my mind, which is, you know, when we walk in the light as he is in the light, we have fellowship with one another and the blood of Jesus purifies us from all unrighteousness. But that walking in the light, it's what you just explained. It's being vulnerable, right. Confessing. And that's where we find empowerment.
And as dudes, we don't do this well.
Yeah.
And
that's right.
Can't we see that that's exactly what the enemy, whose job description is to kill, steal, destroy, like that's what he wants for us, to stay in that isolation, to stay in that anxiety, to stay in that whatever secret. And he knows if he can keep us there, we won't discover the freedom of community, of friendships, of a brotherhood that can actually build each other up. Because my guess is the dude who's next to you is also struggling with maybe the same thing or something that's similar, and you're living in fear and isolation in those places, and we feel like we can't go there. But I've discovered, man, when I actually go there, there's this, oh my goodness, dude, me too. You know, like, you know, and you're like, okay, well, I'm not alone in this. So
anyway. Preach it. Okay. So Kent, as we close up our time together, how I just have this on my heart because, you know, I've always been a Steelers fan, my whole life as well, but there came a time, it was probably about 5 years ago, that I realized that football and the NFL and the Steelers were an idol to me. And so I had to take a whole season off.
Become and a Browns fan, then you won't have that idol.
That's good.
Any Cleveland sports team. Yeah, I mean, the Cavs have been doing well until this week. And so I have to put that idol down too.
That's good.
That's a great point, Chris. That's good. So I had to take like a whole year off of watching anything NFL, didn't look at NFL.com, didn't look at ESPN. I didn't watch any games. And so I fasted basically from football, the NFL.
Yeah, that's
and, it. And actually I've come back and since then have been much more healthy in that God kind of broke that for me. You know, I can actually watch a half, like this happened this year. I watched a part of the first half of the game. It got really sunny. And I knew it was the only time it was going to be sunny for a while. I'm like, I'm going to go out and mow the grass. And I left and I didn't anyway. So that side note. But here's the thing. I think, you know, as fans, you look at the Steelers players, you know, in a certain way, which I don't think is always healthy. I know that happened for me. So here's my question to you. How can we be praying for the players, the staff, the administration, coaches? You have a unique insight into that. So how can we be praying for the Steelers organization? And then connected to that, you and Erica, as you continue to minister.
Yeah. So right away to that, I would say pray for marriages, pray for relationships. You want to talk about temptation that is magnified for these young men, for these coaches. You've heard the stories. You know, I've now watched them as I get off the bus with them, as I travel with the team. There are women who are waiting, you know, and yeah. And we need to pray because in the NFL, coaches, players have extremely long hours. As much as, you know, you hear about, you know, players' day off, dude, they're still in the facility, you know, they're getting the lift. And it just means that players' day off, they're not hitting each other that day, you know, in practice. These young men, these coaches, they put in extremely long hours. And you know, there's even stories across the NFL that in certain coaches' rooms, there's cots and beds, you know, in there. And it's just like, man, that is tough. You know, we've watched as we know, certain coaches' families are in their, you know, homes that are maybe in like a warmer climate, because or wherever they're from, they have a home there. And they might have older kids. So the kids, they don't want to rip them out of school. So here you have a husband and a wife and kids who are separated from their father, right? So I would pray for marriages. I would pray for families. Pray against temptation for these young men who, you know, they're going to travel out to Los Angeles. And everybody throws everything at these young men. Everybody wants something from these young men. And so I pray for that. I'd also pray because pray that their identities are not tied to this game. You know, this game is brutal. And it's, you know, most of these guys work their entire life to get to the NFL, and then the NFL chews them up and spits them out. The majority of the people who make it to the NFL are only there for about 3 to 4 years, right? Yeah. And so pray against identity being attached to this vocation, and that they would discover who they really are and who God has made them to be. As far as Erica and me, dude, we at the time of this recording of this podcast, we are, because Erica just came on board full time a month ago. And so we are trying to discover as a married couple, as a ministry team, we are trying to figure out what that means, like trying to find our rhythm. We've never been on the same staff together. We've done ministry together, but not like this. And so we're trying to figure out our rhythm. We're trying to figure out the right things to say yes to, trying to figure out like, okay, who's our circle? Because now, like, you know, as a pastor, you know, we used to have this band of brothers and, you know, pastors within our church. And now I'm a missionary. And so churches don't know what to do with me anymore, you know? Yep. So we're just trying to figure out the newness of all of this. And COVID kind of threw a whole wrench into figuring that out. And so what do we say yes to? What do we say no to without being jerks? You know what I mean?
Yep.
Because they're yep. like, there's so many opportunities that are beginning to come our way simply because of the role that we fill. Yeah. And that just because there's an opportunity doesn't mean that God's giving the green light. So which door do we, you know, do we go through? So that's what we're just trying to figure out. So I appreciate your prayers on that, man.
That's awesome. Kent Chevalier, man, this has been an amazing discussion, brother. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today.
My privilege, guys. Thank you for having me, and God bless you.